right, everyone. This is Walker, and you're listening to 91.5 WGLZ. We have our very special guest with us here on the line today. He's a 7-time Emmy Award winner, the former president of the Screen Actors Guild, and one of the most versatile actors in the business today. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Ed Asner with us here on the line. Ed, how are you doing today?
I'm doing a very fine, Walker. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the glowing introduction. Now, can I borrow $10 from you?
We'll see how the rest of the interview goes.
What?
We'll see how the rest of the interview goes.
No, we're not going to wait. I want to know, you're going to lend me $10 or not?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Now we can talk.
All right. Sounds good.
Is it in the mail?
I'll put it in the mail right after the interview's over.
No, now.
Okay, it's in the mail now. Does that satisfy you?
Yeah, that's better.
I'd like to start off with a little bit about your background. Where are you originally from?
I'm from Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay, very nice. Very nice area there.
Huh?
That's a very nice area there.
Oh, it's lovely. It was lovely. We were... until I was in the second grade, we lived across from the packing house. And it was very vivid, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, vivid. Lots of blood.
Mm.
A lot of black and white and red.
Absolutely. That's how it is sometimes with that business.
Uh-huh.
So growing up, were you into acting from a young age?
I loved to get on the stage wherever it was, but I never thought of acting as a career. I became amazed when in college I tried out for a role at the urging of my roommate, and I ended up doing the lead.
Hmm.
And I got hooked.
So what was that very first role that you played?
It was Thomas A. Becket in T.S. Eliot's play, The Murder in a Cathedral.
Hmm. Very much a classic.
A lovely, lovely poetical drama.
Those are some of the best ones there is.
Yeah.
Where did you say you attended college at again?
University of Chicago. I entered in 1947, and because I learned to a few lines acting, I dropped out in 1949.
Mm. What did you study while you were there?
You took required courses. It was the Hutchins plan.
Oh.
And you tested out whether you had to take the course or not.
Hmm.
I was about average, I guess, for high school graduates.
Okay. So you were at college for 2 years, and then you dropped out to pursue your career.
Yeah.
You served in the military at one point, is that correct?
Afterwards, yeah. Yeah, I put 2 years in the Signal Corps. Ended up in France.
Oh. So what was it like serving overseas?
Well, it got me my life's dream. I always wanted to go to France.
Hmm.
And lo and behold, there I was. So it was a small post in the south-central France. Saumur was the name of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Former home of the great French cavalry school. And it was mostly boring.
Mm-hmm.
But I served my country.
Hey, there you go. And thank you for your service.
I was honorably rewarded for it with a discharge.
So then once you were discharged, you came back to the States and you pursued your acting career.
Right, right.
Where did you start out at from there?
Well, I had heard from Paul Sills while I was in France saying they were starting a theater in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known him at the university, and he said, come back and join us, and we'll do old good plays and new work. And he didn't have to explain any of it. It was a job offer.
Mm-hmm.
So I came home, spent a week at home, and went on to Chicago.
Very nice.
Yeah.
When did you get your first role on television?
Oh, that was much later. I did something that was on Chicago television. We did the Lincoln Douglas debates. And they went well, but that was I didn't get on television really until New York.
When did you end up in New York?
I went to New York in 1955.
Okay. So what was New York like back then for somebody in your industry?
It was exciting. The initial exodus from New York had already gone out to California. So this is like the second round.
Mm-hmm.
But I just decided to take my reviews, make my rounds around the city, and see if anybody was impressed by my reviews. So my first jobs were really on Sunday morning religious shows or artistic shows.
Mm-hmm.
Camera 3, Look Up and Live, Lamp Under My Feet, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Did that for a while, and in the meantime, I slowly began to work my way up with under five roles on network TV. And finally got the big break and was offered guest shots on network TV, as well as working my way up in the Burt Leonard organization, who did Naked City and Route 66.
Okay. So you had a lot of small roles, you gradually build your way up, and then you end up being on what is arguably the biggest show of your career in 1970, which was the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah.
So how did that role come about for you?
I was asked to come in and audition. I hadn't done much comedy in Los Angeles. No, hardly any. And I had high recommendations, I must say. I'm surprised I did. I went in, I read for the role of Lou Grant. And after I finished, Jim Brooks, one of the two producers, said, well, that was a very intelligent reading. And I heard the unwritten line behind that line, which was, it wasn't funny. And he said, when we have you back to read with Mary, we want you to read it all out, wiki, crazy, wild. Read it that way. I didn't know what the hell he meant. So I started to walk out, and I turned around and said, look, why don't you have me read it that way now? And if I can't cut it, don't have me back. I've never talked like that before or since. But they said, well, okay, try it that way. I tried it, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but it was crazy. And they laughed. They laughed appreciably. And they said, read it just like that when you come back with Mary. Oh, I was coming back with Mary. That's good. Came back a week or two later, trying to remember what the hell I had done. And then finally, they laughed appreciatively. And they said, thank you very much. We'll be in touch. I left, and I heard that years later, Mary turned to them and said, are you sure? Oh, there we go.
So you were on Mary Tyler Moore for 7 years. What would a typical day of filming be like?
I'll kind of flop in around 10 o'clock. Do the scenes or do the reading, if it was the first reading. Then go to rehearse, blow by blow by blow.
So over the course of those 7 years, did you have a favorite episode?
There were so many I loved. There were so many I can't even remember that if I saw them, I'd laugh my ass off. So everybody used to say, Chuckles the Clown Bites the Dust. It was the funny one. And it's a great show. the great writer, what the hell's his name? My God. David Lloyd wrote it. You can't beat him as a writer. And it was great. But all the shows were entertaining.
Absolutely. The episodes are funny even to this day. I still enjoy watching the show myself.
Well, I wish I had time to watch it.
Being an actor, do you get to watch a lot of your own work?
Well, I do when I first do it. Certainly, I make an effort to get to it, mm-hmm. to get to the TV to watch it. But after I've seen it, then I move on.
Okay. So you were on Mary Tyler Moore for 7 years, and then when the series ended, you ended up playing the same character on another show.
Yep, with a little different technique.
Mm-hmm. So how did the idea for the spinoff Lou Grant come about?
I have no idea, except that when it was known that Mary Tyler Moore was closing, my agent called CBS and said, are you going to seek Ed for more work? I said, oh, yeah, we want him. Find a production company and tell us what you're going to do. So we naturally wanted to be with MTM. We wanted my two producers. I thought they'd just, you know, take me into a comedy. About a month or so later, they came back and said that they felt they wanted to do have Lou go back to print journalism and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be an hour show. They're doing an hour show with one camera. No audience participation. Is a far cry from doing a three-camera show with an audience. And jokes you could laugh out loud at. With a one-camera show, it must be total silence. And let the people decide at home whether to laugh or not.
Mm-hmm. What's the transition like from going to a comedy to a drama?
It's a huge, huge gorge. A huge valley. And yet, doing it for 7 years, I came to learn that you have to trust yourself and the material with comedy. And that the greatest tragedy deserves to have comic elements in it. So I look for the comedy no matter what I'm doing. Bringing out the joke is a great reliever for people watching.
Okay. I can see that. It's always nice to have a little bit of humor, even in the darkest of situations.
Right. Right.
One of the things I'd like to point out to our listeners is the fact that you won an Emmy for playing Lou Grant on both the comedy Mary Tyler Moore and on the drama Lou Grant. And you were the very first actor to ever do that.
Well, when you're great, you're great. What else can I say?
Well put. Now, you did a number of acting shows after Lou Grant went off the air, but during that same time stretch, you were the president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Mm-hmm.
How did you first become involved in the political aspect of the Screen Actors Guild?
Well, I was with what you would call a rebel group. I'll leave it at that. But we've been trying for years to try to get a different voice heard in the halls of the Screen Actors Guild, and finally by the time I arrived, which was right after the 1980 strike, there was enough discontent in the union at the strike and the fact that we didn't get that much by the strike. Enough people wanted a change, and I was the candidate that was brought forward by the rebels. and I defeated a good man, William Shellert, who had been the president up until that point. And they were buying a pig and a poke with me. But I was there for two terms, and I did the best I could.
What all did you accomplish while you were in office?
What all did I accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
No strikes.
There you go. That's the first priority right there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I heightened people's pride in being part of the union. They became much more dedicated, much more active. Our reaching out increased, both to both in terms of race, and in terms of age, in terms of women. We extended our reach.
That's a good thing. It's always nice to have diversity in the business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So then once you were out of office, you did a lot of vocal work during the 1980s and 90s. How did you first get involved with doing voiceover acting?
I don't know whose idea it was. Oh, it was Captain Planet. It was... I did a character on that that was well brought up, well brought out. And it led to further work with other shows.
Very nice, very nice. You have one of the better voices in the business, too, so it's always a pleasure to get to hear your voice when you're doing vocal work.
I don't know why, but it seems like when I'm doing these interviews lately, I'm getting into a low growl. That I'm certainly not cultivating, but I guess it's getting familiar with somebody on the other end of the line creates that huskiness.
As long as it gets the job done, I don't care what voice you're talking. I'm enjoying this.
Well,
so.
Thank you.
So then in recent years, you've been introduced to a new generation of viewers, especially younger people, with your role of Santa in the movie Elf.
Mm-hmm. A beautiful movie. John Favreau just did himself purple in there. He was an emperor. And having Will Ferrell be the chief bumbling elf was scoring the impossible.
So many, many people my age were first reintroduced to you with that role of Santa and Elf. So does that mean you'll be doing more geared towards kids, or do you have like a preference for when you're doing a role?
No, they seek me out. I just finished a low-budget film in Rhode Island where I played Santa.
Mm.
Once again.
Very nice. And then the other most famous role you're known for in more recent years, especially among younger people, was the voice of Carl Fredrickson in the movie Up.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, they wrote a great script there. A great script. And all I did was read the lines, but boy, they were honeys. And they knew Pete Docter was the writer-producer.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly knew how to speed the job along. Did a wonderful piece of job.
Absolutely. It's one of my all-time favorite animated films. It's got a beautiful plot line, beautiful stories being told in that movie.
Yeah. I was quite impressed by the twists and turns that he gave us. Very bright man.
Absolutely. What sort of film roles have you been working on in the last 2 to 3 years?
Oh, nothing major, frankly. The Santa Claus I just finished. I did a movie in Canada shortly before that. that was written by I can't remember his name. Michael. I can't remember people's names anymore. I can remember lines, but no names. That shows you where I am, doesn't it? Oh, boy. Had a lovely bunch of actors in it. Cynthia Nixon, Melissa Leo, wonderful Welsh actor named... can't remember his name now either. But he was wonderful. O'Hare. Michael O'Hare wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And he also acted in it. And Dennis Story, I think is his name, was the director.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and his wife was the subject of discussion in the piece itself. His wife is a lovely actress, and I can't think of her name. So you're ending up with no names all over the place.
I'd like to talk a little bit now about some of the awards that you've won over the years. You've won 7 Emmy Awards, which is currently more than any other male actor in the business.
No accounting for taste.
Hey, there you go. People have good taste. People like good actors, and you're a wonderful actor.
Oh, thank you.
You were also inducted into the Academy of Television Arts and Science Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also a recipient of the Screen Actor Guild Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, I know how to fool them, don't I?
What was the atmosphere like when you received the Lifetime Achievement Award? What kind of feelings go through your mind when you win that?
Well, you're asking me to remember again, and I can't. It's a blank. I don't even know what year that was.
That was in 2001.
My God, you're asking me to remember something that was 16 years ago? You're out of your mind. I know I am.
That's okay. As long as you can do a good interview, I don't care if you're in your mind, out of your mind, looking in on your mind, as long as you're a good speaker, it's all I care about.
I'll do my best. I'll do my best.
Do you have any advice for younger people who want to go into acting as a
career? Well, it is a wonderful, wonderful profession. You'll probably get overlooked countless times, and maybe forever. But it's a good learning place. It stimulates the psyche. You meet a wonderful class of people called actors, and hopefully find good friends and maybe even a wife among them.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to work and try to capture people at their fullest, if you're lucky. Lucky to get the right material to work with.
As we get ready to wrap this interview up, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to hear?
Well, I have been acting since 1949. That's 51 and 17 is 68 years. I don't think I made a mistake. And I would say that in this day of disappearing jobs, that you can find people who will pay a buck to see you work, it's a wonderful challenge to you to choose the business, the art, the business, whatever you want to call it. Develop the character that will entertain those people. And you'll find that in itself is rewarding. To get into the heart of a character and emulate him perfectly. That's acting.
That's a wonderful feeling, too, being able to see that up there on the screen and being able to identify with the character that you're playing and being able to just relate to it. It really is a wonderful feeling.
I'm a lucky man.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Eddie. Have a good time.
You too, Ed. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you, listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Ed Asner. WGLZ would like to apologize for any language heard during the course of the interview. We are now going to get back to the music. Here is Boomerhood on 91.5 WGLZ West Liberty, West Virginia.